Hello and welcome to The Master's Voice, the podcast series on MediaBrief.com. I'm your host and friend Pawan R. Chawla, and I'm delighted to announce that this episode of The Master's Voice is truly special. Because I have with me a top globally respected thinker, advisor, author, and guide on transformative movement-oriented philosophy and strategy. Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm working with leaders of many top global companies such as Mahindra, Google, Emirates, PepsiCo, SunTrust Bank, Trust, Walmart, and more. Scott, welcome to The Master's Voice on MediaBrief.com.
Pawan, pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Scott, for the time, and congratulations on your new book, Activate Brand Purpose. And thanks also to AdFactors PR for making this possible. Before I continue our conversation, allow me to introduce you to my listeners. So here goes, Scott Goodson. Scott is founder and chairman of Strawberry Frog, a global cultural movement firm, and author of the book Uprising, How to Build Your Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements. Scott has worked, as I mentioned, with leading global brands, and in his book Uprising, he argues that movement marketing is the best and perhaps only way for companies to connect with consumers in the age of social media. And when done effectively, the interaction between companies and consumers can lead to positive social change. Scott started his career, his advertising career, in Stockholm, Sweden, launching Björnborg's fashion line, and is one of a group of marketers who emerged from the Swedish advertising industry in the late 1980s and 1990s. Goodson and co-founder Karin Dreckenberg moved to Amsterdam in the late 1990s to start Strawberry Frog with the launch of the small two-seat smart car as their founding client, along with IKEA and Ericsson smartphones, the world leader at the time. Some great work Goodson's done with top brands so far includes the global movement strategy and motto for Emirates entitled Hello Tomorrow, the Make History motto for Jim Beam, the movement strategy and motto Rise for the Mahindra Group, and the On Up cultural movement for SunTrust Bank, and much more. And most recently, the reason we've chased Scott to the other end of the earth is his excellent new book that I mentioned, Activate Brand Purpose, which is out now. So that's my distinguished guest, Scott Goodson, founder and chairman of global cultural movement firm Strawberry Frog. Brief introduction that, Scott. Welcome once again to The Master's Voice on MediaBrief.com.
Thank you, Pawan.
So let's cut to the chase here, Scott. Tell us about your new book, Activate Brand Purpose. I mean, I'm aware that Harvard Business School professor Ranjay Gulati said about your book that, and I quote, "This book identifies how not merely to talk about purpose, but actually to do it." You tell us more.
Well, I think he's, you know, did a wonderful job in kind of synthesizing in essence what the book is. But in a nutshell, I think we've lived through a period pre-COVID where business leaders have done a lot of talking about what should be done and, you know, identifying issues. But, you know, they frame that idea in a lovely picture frame and they put it behind their desk and nothing else happens. I think we're at a time now after COVID where they need, this is about action. Less talk, more action. I describe it as less, in the US we have a term called woke. You know that, you know, the idea of being a woke person, you're aware of issues. We have to move CEOs from being woke to warriors. They need to become activators of purpose and not just theoretical strategies that don't do anything. They need to put purpose at the center of their company and they need to activate it. That's what the core essence of the book is about. And I think, you know, the hypothesis is, and it's been my hypothesis for many years, and one of the reasons why I connected, I believe, very well with Anand Mahindra and the leadership of Mahindra is, you know, the belief that big business has a role to play in solving some of our issues. Government obviously has an important role in solving some big issues, but so too does business. I mean, to many, I think business feels like it's part of the problem. And, you know, Rebecca Henderson is another professor from Harvard, has written a book called Reimagine Capitalism, where she says companies are destroying the world and we need to rethink capitalism. And to some extent, I mean, to a large extent, she's correct. you know, framing it from the perspective of companies have, it's actually in their interest to solve bigger issues. If people live longer, healthier lives, if they're not poisoned, if they're not, you know, limited in terms of their financial capabilities, if their lives are not improving or rising, so to speak, then they don't sell more stuff. Companies actually don't benefit. So selfishly, it's in a corporation's interest to improve the quality of life. And so that, in a sense, is kind of the hypothesis of what I'm all about as a person and what this book is about, activating that purpose inside companies.
Wonderful. So insightful, Scott. And Scott, I think the central idea and mission of Activate Brand Purpose sits really well with and belongs in the here and now of today. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better time to launch Activate Brand Purpose when values, empathy, self-realization, and a far greater amount of humility pervades mankind, if I may make that generalization. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You know, I think we're seeing during COVID what the world being, you know, challenged and affected by climate change, you know, and many other issues, what it actually means, right? This is a sum total of humanity and the wilderness coming together and, you know, viruses being spread immediately around the planet. And it's not just affecting, you know, the impoverished part of society, it affects everyone, you know, and we will not solve the issue of COVID until everyone is vaccinated, until everyone has access to quality health care. So, you know, this is the reality. You know, this virus doesn't have a passport. It doesn't stop at a border. It doesn't stop in a postal district. You know, it affects everyone. And if part of the community that don't have access to proper health care don't get proper health care, then they will continue to have the virus and it will continue to mutate and it will continue to affect our lives for generations to come. So absolutely.
And so for a brand or an individual too, it's all about demonstrating you walk the talk of your mission, vision, values, and that all that you say and do actually totals to your overall behavior in society and the marketplace. So how have brands, according to you, in your view, been communicating during the pandemic and lockdown?
I think some brands that have a purpose and that have activated their purpose have done so in a way which is exemplary and really poster child for any business leader. One example I can give you is, so you mentioned in your introduction that I've worked with a company called SunTrust, which is one of the largest banks in the United States. They have subsequently merged with a company called BB&T to create an even larger financial institution called Truist. And the first thing that Truist did when the leaders of both companies got together was to actually write their purpose. Leaders wrote their purpose, the CEO, COO, and other members of the executive leadership team. And the purpose they came up with was inspiring and building better lives and communities. So right from the beginning, they were focused on inspiring and building better lives and communities. So when COVID hit, which was just, you know, a few months after they had completed that exercise, they immediately developed something called Truist Cares, which was a program to help people in the community. They didn't have to spend months and months thinking about it. They had a rudder in the ship, even though the ship wasn't completely built. The rudder was there. The ship started moving into the sea. The waves started to hit the ship, but they kept on sailing. They weren't playing about with the wind blowing this way and that way and being indecisive. They were highly decisive. And the Truist Cares program really made a difference. And to me, that's a great example of what a purpose that is activated can do in times of great change, especially during COVID.
So Scott, you've worked with leaders of many top global companies, like I mentioned, such as Mahindra, Google, Emirates, PepsiCo, SunTrust Bank, Trust, Walmart, and more. And you keep meeting a company leader ever so often. What is common between the best leaders, the most forward-thinking, progressive ones, like those from the companies I just named? What are the common traits in great leaders?
I think the common traits today are among a select group of top leaders is the idea that companies and business have to stop destroying the planet and they have to start solving the bigger problems that we face. And that really defines, in my opinion, leadership. You know, these leaders have understood that Milton Friedman had it wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, a great economist from the University of Chicago who won, I believe he won the Nobel Prize, that it's not about shareholder value, it's about everyone. And the leaders who understand that and are actually putting in place tangible actions to drive positive change are the ones who are the genuine leaders.
Excellent.
Time for a little break. You're tuned to The Master's Voice with me, your host and friend Pawan R. Chawla. And with me today is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm. Stay tuned. We'll be back. And we are back. I'm your host and friend, Pawan R. Chawla. With me is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm working with leaders of many top global companies and spreading light and purpose across the world. Okay, Scott, let's get back to your excellent book, Activate Brand Purpose, which I would actually recommend becomes essential reading at every under and postgraduate institution of professional education and training for management, marketing, communications. In fact, other subjects too, in a genre and sector agnostic way. So my next question is, how would leaders across, company, verticals, functions or teams benefit from this book? What would they learn, and how would that cloud or blockchain of learning, if I may, add up to what kind of overall benefit for any brand and organization?
So the book Activate Brand Purpose puts forward a powerful argument that if you want to fix the world and grow your business or transform your business or attract the best talent or retain the best talent, you better harness the power of purpose and activate that. That will help you grow your business. So that's the underlying hypothesis of the book, which is proven now. I mean, last week here in the United States, the Business Roundtable, which is the group of 180 plus of the top CEOs, came out and announced that it is the purpose of the US economy and capitalism to serve every American, not just the rich. So that was an about face. Second thing that happened last week was the SEC came out and announced that they were putting together a task force to find out and identify which organizations in the United States did not have a climate change policy and were not activating it. So you're already seeing very, very influential leadership groups where CEOs and organizations that CEOs obviously are a part of or pay attention to are putting the gauntlet down and saying, you need to activate your purpose. You need to help solve some of these bigger issues out there, not just make money. So that's the overall sort of, let's say, important, the essence of the book and why it's important. If you break that down into different departments inside an organization, I can explain why Activate Brand Purpose plays an important role and is a tool for business leaders today. First of all, for CEOs, if you are trying to transform your company or transform your culture or to change the habits of your employees, we're living in a world where top-down mandates from the C-suite don't work anymore. We're living in a peer-to-peer world where people get their cues from their friends and their colleagues and not from the top. You're more likely to push talented people out of your company if you mandate something rather than building a movement. A movement builds trust, creativity, engagement, motivation, passions, all those things that leaders want when they're introducing a new strategy or when they're trying to reimagine a company or if they're trying to break into new markets. Think about it. You are evangelizing a big, important idea and answering the big question, you know, why is this company here other than just making money? How are we helping to drive positive change? So from a CEO's perspective, that's why this book is an important read. Then if we think about the CHRO, the Chief Human Resources Officer, or the Human Resources Management, the book also plays an important role because it says, look, this is really your time. Up to this point, the HR leadership have really been an extension of the legal department. They've worked in a sense as almost a protector of the company from employees and how they behave and how they act inside the organization. COVID has really put CHROs on a platform and given them a voice for probably the first time where CEOs are turning to CHROs and saying, hey, you've got to help me fix a lot of issues. You know, number one, you know, deal with physical, emotional, and financial well-being issues of our employees. You know, I as a CEO have got a lot of things to deal with, but I need a human leader in the human resources area who can tackle these, you know, these anxieties and fears that have been created as a result of COVID. Right. In addition to that, you know, I need you to recruit some top people. I need you to retain our best people. I need you to focus our people because now we're working remotely on Zoom and we're not physically together. So there's a lot of issues that, you know, companies are facing. And this is really the CHRO's moment in the sun. This is where they can stand up. You know, in the past, it was like the CFO and the CEO ran the show. Now the HR head is really an extraordinary individual who can play such an important role. And one example is they've moved, for example, at Mahindra in India, they moved a gentleman by the name of Ruzbe, who used to be chief strategy officer, into the role of CHRO. Just underlines how important that role is to the future of very large organizations such as Mahindra. Thirdly, of course, is the chief marketing officer. So, you know, someone responsible for brand marketing. The book shows a framework within which you can engage consumers and prospects. So instead of selling people, the book proves to you that when you launch a movement against something or for something, you can build a relationship with consumers and prospects around ideas that they already care about, rather than simply coming up with a very creative way to try to hawk something on television. People are kind of becoming immune to those types of messages. Plus, messages aren't, you know, coming through television much anymore. They're coming through lots of different channels, through podcasts like yours, Pawan, through social media, through PR and all those sorts of things. So if you have a movement, if you take a stand about an issue that's relevant to your company, not just any issue, you're more likely to build a strong relationship with consumers. Case in point, you mentioned Jim Beam. Jim Beam is a brand that we worked with for many years. Instead of Jim Beam being a brand that we marketed to the world as a better liquid or a better history, what we said was we were going to create a movement against the patriarchy and for equality. And that was directly related to our strategy, which we wanted to attract more female drinkers, younger drinkers into the brand, because the brand had, you know, drinkers that were over the age of 60. So what we did was we said we're creating a movement against the patriarchy and for equality. And we then hired Mila Kunis, who's a very well-known global celebrity, and she became the spokesperson. And the brand very quickly outperformed Jack Daniels, which was the biggest brand. And at the time when we started, Jack Daniels was $12 a bottle and Jim Beam was like $8 a bottle. And it's more or less the same liquid. They will tell you that's different. Of course, there are some differences, but generally speaking, it's an American bourbon / whiskey. But the bottle really is the differentiator. That movement that we created with Mila Kunis called Make History turn that on its head. Today, Jim Beam has the younger consumer base. The brand is, price of the product is significantly higher, and they are dominating the industry, and Jack is actually the one that's in trouble. So it's actually a better business strategy for marketers to take on this approach. And then finally, I would say even the chief financial officer, there's a chapter in the book about how financial officers should think about movements as a new way to reframe equity and investing, so that perhaps, for example, companies could start offering movement shares. So when you buy into a movement, you're not just buying into it philosophically, you're buying into it financially and benefit from the success of that movement and the way it hits and is impacting the planet. So that just kind of in a way breaks down what the book offers.
Excellent, excellent. Time for a little break. You're tuned to The Master's Voice with me, your host and friend Pawan R. Chawla, and with me today is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm. Stay tuned, we'll be back. And we are back. I'm your host and friend, Pawan R. Chawla. With me is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm working with leaders of many top global companies and spreading light and purpose across the world. So the power of a movement can change habits and, you know, rally millions. And you did something incredible, which I want to come to next. You know, Scott, you did that for a brand that has become a torchbearer for progressive thinking in India and is a great calling card for progressive modern India to the world, the Mahindra Group. You wrote the movement strategy and the motto, Rise, for the Mahindra Group. How did the Rise motto come about? What was the vision that drove it?
First of all, a lot of credit is due to Anand Mahindra himself. I would say a lot of what I've been talking about, he believes, and I think I learned a lot from him in terms of his view of the world and the role of business. And you know, you can't, what I'm talking about is has to be genuine. Toothless purpose is giving it all a bad name, isn't it? I mean, if it's not genuine, if you just stick an issue on a company that has absolutely nothing to do with what you're trying to solve, it's just not gonna. Today, there's something called cancel culture. Cancel culture is when people, there's a backlash, you know, if you do something or say something that is not actually something you care about or actually have proven that you stand for. And so, you know, you don't want to have a backlash. You don't want to say something that's irrelevant. So it has to be genuine. When we started to work with Mahindra, and I had the opportunity to meet with the leadership, also a gentleman by the name of Pawan Goenka and the other gentleman, Ruzbe, who I mentioned to you, what I found was that they were, first of all, an extraordinary organization with a deep culture of innovation, that it almost lived in the earth beneath the organization. You know, it was in the history of the group, the culture. And then they were faced with, I would say, a problem that many companies are faced. You know, it's a confederation of companies. They have a lot of CEOs with different goals and different business objectives. And when companies try to do a positioning, traditional marketing positioning, which is when you try to figure out what is this company about, how do we describe what we do? When you go down that path, it's a very tough argument or debate, because, you know, when you have a confederation or a matrix organization, you've got different leaders that'll say, hey, you know, we're in the aerospace business and our customers are not the same as, you know, a retail chain of baby clothes, or the CEO of the tractor business says, you know, we're in the tractor business. We don't have the same customers as, you know, $2.5 million super electric car called the Pininfarina Battista. That's a different consumer. So how can we describe what we do? That's a rabbit hole that companies go into and they never come out of. If you, on the other hand, talk about what is an idea on the rising culture that we can be a part of, that we can help drive, that we can crystallize, inspire, that has not directly related to what we care about as an organization, our values, then it's much easier to build collaboration. And so when we started to talk in that way, we went from division inside of Mahindra to collaboration and unity and strength behind the idea of Rise, which really was a way to talk about, number one, the innovation culture that had been in the organization for years. So, you know, use innovation to drive positive change really was the underlying message of RISE. The purpose was that. And then the movement was, we're driving positive change in the world. We're going to help people rise. And we want people inside the organization to be a part of that movement. And we want you who live out there in this world of ours, whether you live in India or South Africa or Chile, or even the United States, where Mahindra is active, and many other countries, we want to help people rise. And you know what? It was very, very successful. And in fact, it's an incredible example of how a strong purpose that's activated with a movement does not decay. In fact, there was an article last year in the Harvard Business Review, which showcased RISE as one of the best examples of how a company purpose was activated. And if you have a chance to go to the Harvard Business Review, you can find the article. It's called Put Purpose at the Core of Your Strategy. And I just think that it's the yardstick against which great companies should be measured, what Mahindra has done.
Wonderful. And I'm sure it was pretty good that Anand Mahindra, one of India's most loved popular business leaders, I think he's a true visionary. And I confess, I'm one of his biggest fans. You know, he was backing this to the hilt. And then the rest of his management, his senior team, was also equally inspired. So a benefit I see is that perhaps the actual genuine general internalizing of the RISE motto across the entire massive workforce of the Mahindra Group would have been a great big benefit. And that actually embeds the kind of thinking and philosophy which work like an engine of society first initiatives and growth. So how did you go about writing active brand purpose? Tell me, how easy or difficult is it to co-author a book like this? You collaborated with veteran strategic leader Chip Walker. What was the collaborative process like to collaborative co-authoring of a book on a theme on which both writers are experts and which they are equally passionate about?
First of all, we sat down in our offices in the Empire State Building on the 52nd floor. We had a view of Manhattan, and we basically put up 12 large pieces of paper, and we started to brainstorm about, you know, what this book could be about. Mm-hmm. And we started to, you know, identify really, I would say, this idea of movement thinking as the core sort of philosophy of the book. And then we divided it into 12 chapters as it relates to different, let's say, need states, unmet needs. So one would be leadership, i.e. the CEO, how movement thinking impacts the role of the CEO in today's world. Then we went through, you know, each of the other C-suite. And we talked about the role of this in a merger, because we did the largest merger a couple of years ago in the financial world, the merger of the National Bank of Abu Dhabi and the First Gulf Bank. And we did a whole purpose and movement to help them galvanize their employees and then marketing campaign to the community. And then most recently, we've been working with this other merger I mentioned, which is SunTrust merging with BB&T. So, you know, we had a whole chapter on mergers. We have a whole chapter on innovative ideas around, as I mentioned, finance, how financial leaders might think about movement in a new way, all with the same goal of driving positive change. So we sat down in the room, we started filling out the papers. I took the first chapter, Chip took the second chapter, I ended back and forth. And then just as we were about to sit and discuss the summary, COVID started to fall into Manhattan and permeate into all corners of the city, and everything shut down very quickly. And we moved from office to remote work, which we've been doing, you know, since then, since last February. But we continue to work over Zoom. And actually, if there was a silver lining with COVID, is we had the opportunity to have a little more extra time. So we were able to work on the book and actually complete it during COVID so that it was ready for, you know, spring 2021. That's basically it. And I would argue just two final points that, you know, we spoke to many, many CEOs and business leaders, including Anand Mahindra, as well as CMOs and CHROs and CFOs and financial leaders. And we got some extraordinary in points of view of people who are actually doing what we're talking about. So there's some really great lessons there. And then the final chapter really just summarizes it all. And that is the chapter about Mahindra, because Mahindra really fires on all cylinders. It really does everything that each of those chapters talks about
And it's been doing it for over a decade, which is obviously the biggest challenge. You know, when you launch a company-wide cultural movement or a culture, it can decay and it can disappear. And, you know, now there's a new CEO at Mahindra and it's still strong. So, you know, it withstands change of leadership, it withstands time. And that's why we made it, you know, the summary chapter, the anchor chapter of the entire book. So if you're interested in the Mahindra case study, I think that chapter really does a terrific job. We've interviewed all the leaders of the organization and laid out the story from A to Z in a way that really brings it to life in a very pragmatic way.
Excellent. Professionals will love it and they will find immense insights and will be driven to, you know, buying the book. And to buy the book, they can go to activatebrandpurpose.com. Check out the book. You can read things like why we wrote the book, what's really great about it, and you will definitely want to pick up the book. Time for a little break. You're tuned to The Master's Voice with me, your host and friend Pawan R. Chawla. And with me today is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm. Stay tuned. We'll be back. And we are back. I'm your host and friend, Pawan R. Chawla. With me is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm working with leaders of many top global companies and spreading light and purpose across the world. Some more quick questions on the writing of Activate Brand Purpose. What kind of research did you do and how long did you spend researching before beginning the book? Or was it distilling experiences from a treasure chest of memories?
We did a lot of research actually prior to launching the book. We wanted to identify the leaders in the world today who really exemplified, you know, the essence of what we were trying to say in the book. And that's a time-consuming process because you have to identify them and then you have to reach out and you have to interview them and get their point of view. And we were very fortunate to have connected with people who are not only like-minded, but almost, like I said, warriors, you know, in this state. And I think these were not individuals that we, you know, were fighting against this idea. These are people that fundamentally live it every day. So we were fortunate enough to have very positive, engaged people, you know, leaders that we talked to. But it's still very time consuming. So that was really the process. Then, of course, you know, you write a long book, and then we have, of course, had to pull out the scissors and start cutting.
That's a painful part, isn't it?
So we really wanted to put a lot of time into really challenging our hypothesis, challenging how we brought that to life, how we in fact activated it. And a lot of work ended up on the cutting room floor, so to speak. So the book is a relatively easy read, very, very powerful. I think the most powerful books are very easy, inspiring, pragmatic guide for business leaders. And as you mentioned, students who are aspiring to be entrepreneurs, for example, starting a business. Like, for example, which is in the book, you know, why start a business to make money when you can start a business to solve a real problem? I mean, it's a much better starting point and there's a greater need. Something like that just frames the way entrepreneurs can think. Because, you know, entrepreneurs are so full of enthusiasm and can-do spirit and passion, they sometimes don't think beyond the innovation. So what more than the innovation can, you know, I help solve? Not only solve real issues, but align me with other great leaders and where the world is going. And one other thing, which is the launch of what I call the purpose economy, which is coming post-COVID. So that's all part of the book. And then the final thing I would say is, much like the example of Mahindra, where purpose activated helped build collaboration between a multidisciplined corporation, we, my partner in this case, Chip Walker, and I, co-author, we had great collaboration because we shared the same philosophy. We share the same purpose. And when you share a purpose and you activate that purpose, in this case, the book, you have great collaboration. And in many cases in companies, there is a lack of collaboration. So purpose and movement actually improve collaboration inside companies as well, much like it did with my co-author and I.
Absolutely. Excellent. And you just mentioned, and I totally agree, that Activate Brand Purpose is a truly insightful, inspiring book. So let me get some insights from another really inspiring book, your first one, which became a bestseller when McGraw-Hill, wasn't it? Published it in 2012. Uprising, How to Build a Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements. What was that book about, and what new vision did it roll out for brands and brand building?
So when I started working in marketing back in the 80s, I worked in, as you mentioned at the beginning, Sweden. And Sweden, advertising was illegal for many years. You couldn't have television advertising, there was no radio advertising. And it really grew out of, I think, a mindset in the 1970s and 80s that advertising was really probably the worst side of capitalism. You know, it got people to buy things they didn't need. And Sweden, being a social democracy, really didn't want that. They wanted people to live, you know, healthy lives, eating the right foods, not being persuaded by these, you know, creative advertising campaigns. So for many years, it was kind of controlled by the government. And then around the end of the 80s, they changed those rules, which was because technology, you know, made it impossible to limit advertising. But you had a lot of people coming from the public sector into the advertising world, and they came to advertising with purpose inbuilt, because they came from the public sector, from government, from the communication side, where they were, you know, communicating values and ideas. So they brought that to bear. And I think, you know, Swedish advertising was very innovative, very technologically advanced, but it also had a soul. And it was trying to solve some of these bigger issues. And I grew up in that time. So I realized that this is quite unique. You know, if you look at what the world advertising was about, Sweden really was a hotbed for really purpose strategy. And it wasn't because, let's say, CEOs were advanced. I think it was because consumers in the Nordics demanded more of their companies. They wanted less pollution. They wanted less wrapping on their products that they bought. They wanted more women in roles of leadership. And so they pressed the companies to do more. And we started developing purpose strategies, you know, in the early 90s. And as Swedish industry started to roll out outside of Scandinavia and the world, and one of the clients I worked with was Ericsson at the time, was 60% of the world's mobile industry. Nokia, which was Finnish, was a competitor at the time. As I worked with those companies, we took purpose strategies that we had developed for the Nordics and started rolling them out in Germany and Switzerland and other northern countries. And for the most part, it worked very well. But as we moved into, let's say, Eastern Europe and Southern Europe, and in countries in Asia and South America, even the United States, people didn't understand what purpose was. It didn't seem to make any sense whatsoever. Why should you have a purpose when you can just sell stuff? And of course, that's come around now, and now it's the hottest topic for a CEO is to develop a purpose. And that's really my history, is coming from that perspective. That legacy has really taught me what kind of purpose works, what kind of purpose doesn't work, and bringing, you know, that expertise to CEOs to help them develop a purpose that they can activate that's genuine and that actually moves the organization forward.
Wonderful.
I semi-answered your question about Uprising, the book, and the difference between that book and this new book. I'll just briefly summarize and say the first book was really, you know, my history of coming from purpose and then activating it. When I started Strawberry Frog, the first client that we had was a brand called Smart, which was a new car launched by Swatch and Mercedes. And we created a movement called Reduce to the Max, which was about reinventing the urban environment. And we were part of creating that work. And it really was a great example of how marketing should be about movement. So the first book introduced the concept of movement marketing to the world as a better way to market brands rather than traditional advertising. And what this new book, Activate Brand Purpose, does is it kind of takes that to a different level. And we define it as movement thinking and how it can be applied to not just marketing, but leadership, human resource management, and financial innovation. So it's kind of taking that marketing concept, that creativity that we had in the first book to drive positive change, and then bring it to this new book so it applies to a much wider group of executives within companies.
Excellent. Time for a little break. You're tuned to The Master's Voice with me, your host and friend Pawan R. Chawla. And with me today is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm. Stay tuned. We'll be back. And we are back. I'm your host and friend, Pawan R. Chawla. With me is Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog, the celebrated and legendary cultural movement firm working with leaders of many top global companies and spreading light and purpose across the world. Scott, your cultural movements, your entire insights, the strategies that you've been inspiring brands and businesses with, they are remarkable. You've inspired so many brands, individuals, leaders across the world, you know, some of the biggest names. Who, I want you to name one person, who has inspired you the most?
Now, I've met a lot of amazing individuals. I would say the person that has inspired me the most in the many years that I've been doing this is Anand Mahindra. He has been such an extraordinary mind and inspiration for me. The way he thinks, the way he acts, the way he brings ideas to life, the way that he activates big ideas like purpose in movements, the way he inspires others, also over time, is just really quite extraordinary. You know, a lot of leaders kind of forget the big ideas that they launch and they kind of peter out inside organizations. Not him. He's really demonstrated what leadership is about. And also, I should say, inspiration within his organization, because it's not just obviously Anand, there's many other extraordinary leaders inside the company that have also brought their own personality and their own creativity to this idea. I'll give you one example of this man. I was invited to speak at the Mahindra Executive Leadership Summit. Every year they gather somewhere in the world for a couple of days of extraordinary inspiration and talks. And I was asked to speak together with another gentleman at the time, Felix Oberholzer, who's a professor at Harvard, at that event about the importance of purpose and activating that with movement marketing. And I brought my, at the time, 12-year-old son with me. This meeting was happening in Beijing. And I mentioned to Anand that he was with me in Beijing, and he said, well, please bring him to the event. So he sat down at the front of the hall, which was full of 500, you know, CEOs and top leaders in the company. And he made a point of coming forward to him and talking to him in front of everyone about how impressed he was that he was there and how he held the key to the future. And he really gave him some extraordinary thoughts that to this day still motivate him. And then he handed him a coin that symbolized what he was talking about. And I was so moved by that. Not just, you know, you can imagine the CEOs would say, oh, it's so great you brought your kid. But what he did beyond just talking about it, that he actually thought about bringing, you know, giving him a coin that was a symbol, an action of what he stood for, his philosophy. To me, that was just beyond the average. And to this day, it's just been a tremendous inspiration for me.
Wonderful, wonderful. So Scott, thank you ever so much for being on The Master's Voice on MediaBrief.com with me, your host and friend, Pawan R. Chawla. Any thoughts on our conversation so far?
This has been an really extraordinary interview. You have a wonderful voice. And it's very reassuring. So having these tough questions posed, I feel very comfortable answering with you. And it's probably why The Master's Voice has been so successful. I think it's an excellent podcast series, and I'm very fortunate and humbled to have been asked to join you today, Pawan. You are one terrific interviewer, and this podcast is definitely something that everyone should be listening to, and not just in India, but beyond.
Thank you ever so much, Scott.
I appreciate your invitation today, and you really do have a wonderful way of making people feel comfortable. So, you know, I mean, no wonder you are, you know, your show has resonance beyond, you know, the boundaries of India. I'm sure in anyone who is interested in, you know, business and marketing should hear your podcast. It's really quite extraordinary.
Thank you ever so much, Scott, for all the great stuff you do. For all of that, Godspeed, God bless, and keep spreading the light. Scott Goodson, founder and CEO of Strawberry Frog. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends, Strawberry Frog is the celebrated and legendary cultural movement form, and Scott Goodson has been its driving force along with his co-founder. Thank you very much for tuning in, for listening in. I'm sure that all the insights, the wonderful wisdom that Scott had to bring out of all his years of experience is definitely going to provide a lot of actionable stuff that every individual, every marketer, every student of brand building, and everyone with purpose, if it is kindled in their hearts, can actually do a lot with the help of. Thank you ever so much, Scott. And thank you, everyone, my dear friends and listeners, for listening in and tuning in to the Master's Voice on MediaBrief.com. This is your host and friend, Pavanar Chawla. Scott is going to be a very tough act to follow, but I will come back to you with another master from the world of media marketing, advertising, communications. And now I must add this wonderful new mission of purpose. Thank you. Stay safe. Bye-bye.